Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. Or you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm very thrilled. It's a special show. I have my beloved friend, Françoise Mouly, here. Perceiving a lack in the world of children's books, Françoise decided to publish a series of children's books that will be continuing. They are called Toon Books, and they will be coming out, well, around how many?
The goal is to actually do 6 books a year, 3 in the spring and 3 in the fall. I hope I can sustain this. This is what's happening this year, and that's what we're planning for next year.
And what is a toon book?
The books were born, the idea for the books, the need for the books, date back to the time where our kids were just at the age of learning to read. And we have 2 kids, and the older one, when she was told by the teacher in first grade, oh, by January you will know how to read, she just paid attention to the letter forms, and we'd always been reading with her. She attended to it, and the little light bulb, that magical moment, happened, and then she started reading. Took maybe like 2-3 months of sustained attention. Same school, same very bright kid with our son, the second one. Same teacher said, by such and such a date, you have to switch from being read to learning to read yourself. And that didn't follow the same course. The teachers gave easy readers that they assigned, and that's the first time that we had to deal with forced reading. And having that moment, that pleasurable moment of reading with your child, turn into a dreadful assignment. And that was so painful. They were taking something away that we had all liked, parents and children. And the way we survived this, I mean, comic books saved our family. it really was a long period during which we didn't do what the teacher said, but we spent time reading with our son. Art, my husband, was a cartoonist, sacrificed his very valuable comic book collection to fatherhood and read all of his old comic books with both kids, but especially with Dash. And I brought back some comic books from France, and we spent months. But all of a sudden, it was like, oh, this is great. We went back to the pleasure of reading, and I realized this is such a magic bullet because all you want is to be able to share that pleasure with your kid, but comics for very young children is a perfect, as Art calls it, it's a gateway drug to literacy.
Well, first let me explain. The art in question is Art Spiegelman. My guest, Françoise Mouly, is as well the art editor of The New Yorker, and she is the editor of a whole new line of children's books that are, well, cartoon books. They're coming out, as she said, approximately 6 a year. I have advance issues of all of the first 6. The first 3 have come out. And let's say immediately what they are, because they're very beautiful. One of my favorites is Silly Lily and the Four Seasons, because it is for very young readers. It has relatively few words, but they are little poems. I think of them even as little dances about the seasons. And tell about the artist?
So Agnès Rosenstiel is actually a French artist, and in French publishing, she's ubiquitous. She's in a way the Maurice Sendak of France. Like every young child will grow up reading her comics, and it eases them into reading comics later on in their life. She does 8-panel comic strips about a young girl in French is named Mimi Cracra. In English, we named her Silly Lily.
What I love most of all is in Silly Lily how very little happens. She picks apples. She picks up a snail at another season. But it's a greatly delicate work of enormous charm and sweetness, when much is implied by the drawing that is never said. One gets the feeling that Lily is quite mischievous. But she's trusted to be on her own. There is never an adult to be seen in the book. She's not under supervision. And sometimes, as in a page at the front, she's standing on top of the world during the different seasons, wearing during winter a Santa Eskimo suit, spring in a very abbreviated top and shorts, red shorts. You know what we wear in winter and summer. She's facing away from us because the Earth is turning around the sun, and now she is in that part of the rotation. So the book has implicit a lot of things that you can realize. Oh, the Earth is going around the sun. She's turning around. She's being turned by the equinox, by the sense of the seasons themselves.
What I appreciate about the work, similar to what you were describing, is it's distilled. It's essence of storytelling. And the artist, Agnès, is using both the words and the pictures. And she's doing, she's presenting a character that I think is very real, although seldom attended to, which is a child as she's discovering the world. We're being told, suddenly when we move around in the world of children book publishing, that, you know, kids are into fantasy and you have to stimulate their imagination. And actually, when I was doing this, I learned so much that educators and teachers and attentive parents know. The opposite is true. Kids live in a world, and what they want, and certainly what they want from their books, they want order. And they want a way of naming things. And they want to be able to organize what is perceived as this chaotic series of sensory input into something that makes sense.
In at least two of the books, and many children's books besides, I recognize that craving for order is matched by the threat of chaos. What would happen if the child had its own way? Or what would happen if chaos, say in the form of the Cat in the Hat, were to visit and gain access when the sources of order, the parents, are not at home? And so in the first series of books, Otto's Orange Day, Otto gets only one wish from a genie, and Otto's favorite color is orange. And so everything turns orange, and the story is, you see, I didn't realize this before, implicitly about what would happen if the child were to get his own way in everything. It's very, in its way, secretly authoritarian to tell the child, no, no, if you were to be able to turn everything orange, all the food would be orange. When you feel like you have the blues, you would have to say you have the oranges. You would get very tired very quickly. But this is using magic and fantasy to teach the child the virtue of order, arrangement, difference, variety. And of course, children love to eat the same things every day if they had their way.
Exactly. I would take issue with you with the word authoritarian. I think there is a didactic element in children's book which is different than in books for adults. There's some essential difference, and that tends to foster prejudice about considering children's book as art or as literature, which is that the person writing for a child has to take their audience in consideration. And that's different than somebody who is writing a novel or a poem who doesn't have to necessarily shape it in terms of, will my audience understand this? There's a basic premise in adult, in just normal literature or art, that the only mandate the author, the artist, pursue is his own mandate, makes it understandable to himself, and then the audience will follow and will have to stretch if necessary. When you're working for a kid, I've had to have this conversation with a number of authors, such as Art, for example, my husband, who at first wasn't that interested in doing something for young children because he thought it would limit the means at his disposal because he couldn't use a full arsenal of his intelligence or what he would have wanted to do so that the child could follow. But actually, when he decided to do a Toon book, he ended up doing a work of which he's now very proud, and I think quite rightly so, about a jack-in-the-box. And that's one of the books that actually presents the chaos of what comes out of this box. But it's not a matter of, like, don't open the box because it could have don't let the chaos rule the world because it could have disastrous consequences. It's more something that is really a necessary part of understanding, of comprehending, which is experiencing fear and then being able to relive it. And that's true in Otto as well. I think one of the reasons why I firmly believe that books are essential for a child to grow up, not that they shouldn't be playing video games and listening to music and doing like a number of other ways that they can be entertained, but books offer something that no other medium offers, which is that the child gets to drive. The child gets to turn the page in a way that is very different from even playing a video game or watching a movie where somebody else has mapped things out. And it repeats. The book doesn't change. The same way the video game, you can go into different areas and different worlds and so on. But a book is static, except you make it play a different music every single time. So this is like interpreting a written piece of music. You can make something of it. One of the quotes I really liked is inventor of Dungeon and Dragon was quoting something that he had overheard some kids say when they were being asked a long time ago whether they preferred radio or television. And one kid said, oh, I like radio better. And he was asked, why? He said, oh, because the pictures are so much better.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that wonderful?
Any radio person would be fully willing to hire such a child as a publicist.
But that kid is right. The pictures are so much better on the radio because you make them up. And it's true with a book as well. Even with an illustrated book and a comic strip, that you have a canvas, you have a structure. And it's a chaotic structure in autos. There's a genie, and there's consequences of what happens. But it's giving you one of the possible route paths that can be taken. But you get the deep structure of that story. But it's also a quintessential story that you can then use as you're making up your own story.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with my friend Françoise Molny, editor of Toon Books. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Françoise Molny, editor of Toon Books. Now, truth be known, I've been sitting in on this process as the books came together, and I was fascinated that, after all, you and Art had edited Little Lit, which were books that we, as they came out, did on Bookworm. And it seemed like they were heavenly. But these books, as you designed them, were books that publishers had resistance to. And you have essentially started a publishing house for children's books. They are doing very well. The first series sold out even before publication. I mean, it's a kind of wonderful success story. But why do you suppose the publishers were so reticent?
In one theme that kept coming back when I was presenting it to virtually all the children book publishers in New York over the past, like, 5 years was, it's wonderful, it's a great idea, it's beautifully executed, but we're sorry we can't do it. And then when I would say why, it says, oh, because it doesn't exist. It doesn't follow. There's no slot in the bookstore for it. And I would say, yeah, but that's why I want to do it. Because if it existed, you know, I'm busy enough being, like, the mother of two wonderful kids and the wife of a extraordinary husband and the art editor of the New Yorker. It's not like I absolutely have to use all my time to create something if it already existed. That's why I want to do it, is because it doesn't yet exist. But the specific, it was one of those, like, tautological arguments that, like, just kept biting it. Because there is no section for the bookstore for comics for children. It doesn't
fit. I see.
Fit.
So it's not a comic book, nor is it a graphic novel,
yeah,
nor is it a picture book. It's somewhere of its own.
Well, there's two things, and they both reinforce each other. One is that publishers feel that there's a decline of interest in print, of number of people who read and so on. So they are not willing to invest in the future in that sense. They're scared about what will the future bring, except declining sales. And the other is that everything is published with a specific, especially for children, age range in mind. So there are picture books, and those are bought by parents. Or by aunts and uncles, and or by librarians, but it's specifically for young children up till the point where they get into school. And then there is the Harry Potter phenomenon, and there's a lot of books as well as comic book published for the 9 to 12-year-old. But in that moment between the child entering school and having to learn to read and the child being fluent at reading when he or she gets to that point, there is nothing published. Why? Because the kids don't know how to read and the parents are not going to buy them a book for their 7th or 8th birthday. Because they don't know how to read yet.
Now, you tested these. What is that process like? You tested them on children, first
well,
your
see,
own.
That was part of why I wanted to do it myself, is that once I realized that the same arguments that made other people not want to do it was exactly what made me want to do it. And I went back to my roots. I mean, this is where I'm the art editor of The New Yorker now, but ever since I discovered graphic design and making books, I love the whole process of bookmaking. I'm basically a small publisher. So that's what I've done. I published Raw Magazine, which I founded back in 1980 because there was no place to publish comics for adults and grown-ups. So at that time, I went around and art went around to other publishers, same kind of a thing. This is before you even did Mouse, trying to convince everybody we knew you should publish comics and getting this blanket like, oh, no, we can't because it just wasn't done here. Comics were not taken seriously for topics for grown-up. And doing it as a way of like, I'm tired of explaining what so-and-so should do. I'll just make it as an object. And for me, the transformative moment was being able to, in making a book, is in it being able to create an object, something I think of reading as a very sensual pleasure. And for me, that's really important, the smell of a book and what the paper feels like and the look of it and the weight of it are so deeply interwoven into the experience of a book. I can't swear away a book after I've read it because somehow that object and I have interacted in all those many ways. It's gotten battered because I carried it in my bag and I know the pages in a physical way. I'm actually a very concrete person. And that's what I wanted to do for the kids. Not just the abstract notion of, oh, it would be nice for them to have comics, but I wanted to make a book that would be this beautiful object. And what's been very rewarding has been that now I've seen children pick up the book and then hold it to their chest and actually pet it, just kind of like this, because there's a matte laminate on the cover and then there's some spot UV gloss on just the title, but they pet that little area where the title is.
And, oh, how great.
And you know, and just saying, I like this book.
Because there's another book that I liked very much in the series, and I noticed that it's the artist's very first book, and that she's quite young. She's just out of school.
You're holding Stinky by Eleanor Davis. And yes, this is actually an emerging artist. I contacted her. She was still in school at the Savannah College of Art. And this is the first story and book of her. She's immensely talented. And this is what we're seeing now, that comics are actually a more acceptable medium in the mainstream world, that you can have young women. This is really great hope for the future. I want to say, no, it really is, that there are women doing comics, and they have always been, but now they are a driving force. And there are women and girls reading comics. That actually augurs well. One of the things that I meant to say when we were talking about testing the books into school, it wasn't kind of like a market testing as like, oh, do you like chocolate or vanilla or whatever? It was more about the fluency of the read, because I didn't want to presume that I would know what it was like to not be literate. But one thing that was really a surprise to me, every school that I walked in, kids love books. I mean, love, adore, like jump with joy at the idea that I'm coming there to read a book to them.
Why do we have the idea then that they don't?
Where does this come from? Complete misconception, because if you talk to teachers in first, second grade, I mean, when the kid is, story hours is what the kid want being read to. If you wanted to cure all the ills in the world, besides publishing comic books, what you could do is just go to schools and read to the kids. They love one-on-one reading, and they haven't been exposed to it. For a lot of kids, coming into school is the first time that somebody will read to them. They love the experience. They love the repetition of it. They want to go back. That's the main feedback that I kept coming from those kids. They're saying, like, this is wonderful. Like, can you come back tomorrow? And that was...
I've been talking with Françoise Mouly, editor of Toon Books. I'm going to ask Françoise to read the names of the books so far published by Toon.
Oh, the first book that was published, we just mentioned it, is Silly Lily and the Four Seasons by Agnès Rosen-Steele. And then Benny and Penny in Just Pretend by Jeffrey Hayes. And the third book that we mentioned that was out in the spring of 2008 is Otto's Orange Day by two veterans cartoonists, Frank Camusso and Jay Lynch. And then in the fall, the first book by this young emerging cartoonist, Eleanor Davis, called Stinky, and a book by, again, two cartoonists, because that's actually an interesting way to have writer and artist when both are cartoonists, about two young superhero children, tongue-in-cheek take on the superhero world of comics, and that's called Mo and Joe by Dean Haspel and Jay Lynch. And finally, a book by Art Spiegelman, which is also for very young children, Jack and the Box.
It uses the talents of Art Spiegelman, author of Mouse, in a story for very, very young readers. Thank you for joining me, Françoise.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You can see excerpts from some of the books published by Toon at kcrw.com/bookworm. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to recording engineer Leszek Wojcik at Carnegie Studios in New York City. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus, copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Laugh and say, books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.